morning. My name is Maddie, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Optical Consult with Andrew Schmidt conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. Mr. Troy Jensen from Piper Jaffray, you may begin your conference.
All right. Thanks, Maddie. Good morning, everyone. Thanks for dialing into the call. As you know, we've got Andrew Schmidt here that's going to kind of give us our takeaways from the OFC conference. Andrew's still out in L.A. Sounds like he's wrapped up three consecutive days of back-to-back-to-back meetings, so lots of good content to go through. But thank you, too, Andrew, in advance for doing this.
Sure.
Hey, so how about, would love to just kind of get your quick thoughts on some, you know, OFC highlights. You know, I sent you that list of stuff that we can kind of go through, but how about just some quick takeaways to start?
Yeah, I don't think there was any real one big thing. I mean, every show has kind of a blockbuster announcement. And last year it was the Inphi Colors announcement. And I think this year the big surprise announcement was what, CNN was talking about licensing out the DSP.
Yeah.
We can drill into that in detail. I think, I mean, it certainly was a big deal in terms of being a surprise, but I think it's one of those things that's kind of like a chess move where it's not really apparent how it's going to work out until some more time passes, some more moves take place. It's certainly a very big deal, but I think it's a little too early to call on, whether it's going to be very positive or not. The one thing I do see, though, is with that announcement, there's really not a whole lot of downside. The people who, Lumentum, Neo, and Oclaro, who have licensed the DSP from Ciena, they didn't have to pay any NRE, and I think that Ciena is working with them to make sure that they can get to market. So there's not a whole lot of cost on them, and so they get a free call option on the success of that product. And, for Ciena, if it doesn't work out, well, then there's really nothing lost either. So it's all potential upside, but the magnitude of that upside at this point, I think, is really difficult to figure out for a number of reasons.
Right, yeah. So I had meetings with all three of the partners, actually all four with Ciena included. It sounds like it's still very early days, right? So it's not even going to be till kind of the end of 18 that they potentially get revenues from it. Everything I've heard about the DSP from Ciena, it's world class, right? So it's a very good product. But I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't it starting off as a 5x7 form factor versus a CFP?
It is, yeah. It's a 5x7 form factor. And, one of Ciena's goals was to try to get into China. And I think, ideally, if you wanted to get into China, as we've talked about on these calls, a large portion of what's happening there is moving towards DCO. So as a 5x7, it really can't participate in that trend. It can, however, participate in the long-haul portions of the network there. And so that's where they have a shot starting in 2018 to try and take some of the business. Like, I think realistically, it's best case ZTE. I really have a hard time seeing Huawei migrate. But, they can take some business potentially as DTE in their long-haul network with that 5x7. What it really boils down to is they're not going to be sampling this product until the first, I think I heard different dates, but the number that I'm going with is really the beginning of 2018 is when Oclaro, Lumentum, Neo will have modules. And in that sort of time frame, there's going to be other vendors such as Acacia, NEL, and Clarify will all have 400 gig solutions. And
yep.
I mean, I think in a parity situation, Ciena's going to lose every time, right? Because nobody's going to go with the Ciena DSP if they can use a more neutral supplier. But if there's...
Right, and that was always, that was a question in every meeting too, right? It's like, how the hell are you going to convince CTE to put a Ciena DSP into their networking equipment, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's another concern that is yet to be resolved. But I think if ZTE has been relying on Acacia and their 400 gig DSP, and you know, for some reason that thing's not working, which is hard to believe because Acacia is the number one guy in terms of execution. Well, then ZTE suddenly has, you know, other options that they can go and look at. So that's and the other thing, when I had meetings with Lumentum, Neo, and Oclaro, and in all three of them, each one said that it's really not about the first release. This is an ongoing effort. And so I don't even think that their expectations for this product are huge. But what they see this as is a way to get access to DSP technology that isn't obviously locked in at Acacia or at Inphi. And, you know, that's a whole other discussion. But I think ultimately I'd be very worried if I was an optical components vendor about sourcing my DSPs from Inphi.
Yeah, fair. I think the other, I lost my train of thought. How about just sticking on the ACOs, DCOs, just kind of would love to get your thoughts on, you know, kind of status of that market, kind of your forecast for the space, and maybe, you know, any competition. Start with ACO, please, first.
Sure. So on ACO, that market is ramping pretty hard. The big, you know, as from what I've heard, Cisco is inhaling product to support shipments of the NCS 1000. They're also shipping it in the NCS 4000 for Verizon, but the lion's share of that product is going out in their DCI box. And so they've had some real success with that platform. I don't know where that success is, but it's almost certainly one of the big webcos out there. But that's certainly creating a lot of demand for the ACO. I think overall for the whole market this year, the number that I've been using is around 35,000 to 40,000 units. And Cisco realistically could be at least half that market.
Mm-hmm. As far as, you know, Oclaro and how they've been able to lock up contracts, have you heard anything as far as what percentage of Cisco, you know, they've captured?
No, I don't really have any. I mean, I don't have any visibility into the commercial side of things. But what I have heard is that on a technical basis, I mean, their product is set the bar very, very high, and there's now a lot of companies out there with ACOs. Just, you know, for example, Coriant's making their own ACO. There's Acacia, which is now going into production. You know, Finisar's there with a decent product. And I'm probably even forgetting somebody, but there's a bunch of suppliers. But if you can't meet the performance specs that Oclaro has set, then it's you don't really have a product, right? You may have an ACO, but this isn't like the client business where every single QSFP is all kind of the same. It's a commodity. The ACOs are very performance. The performance of those is varies from vendor to vendor. So just because people have an ACO and it's released to production doesn't necessarily mean they're going to get a seat at the table.
Right. That's fair. How about thoughts on Lumentum? Are they anywhere with their kind of integrated chip ACO?
Yeah. So they had some stuff. I didn't go into their back room, but I heard that they had some stuff in their back room and that they're getting close to releasing their ACO. But they haven't really provided any details on that publicly.
Have you heard whether or not it's going to be able to scale up to, you know, 200, 250G?
If they can't do 200, 250G, then they don't have a program. So I don't know that, but knowing Lumentum, they wouldn't be working on this today if it couldn't support that. That's my opinion.
Right. Hey, so I just remember my question that I would kind of, you know, brain gapped on. If you think about Acacia being vertically integrated with its own DSP for its DCO, I mean, can these other guys really compete with them on pricing with the Ciena DSP? I suppose we haven't even heard of what pricing is yet, but...
It depends. I mean, so potentially sure, because Ciena might be willing to sell that DSP for a pretty low price, right? It's all upside for them. And...
Right.
Yeah, their interest, Ciena's interest, I mean, if you really want to start, you know, going up to 20, 30,000 feet. You think about why did they do this, right? They didn't do this to make money, I don't think. I think what they wanted to do is get their technology out in the market and put it up to the Pepsi challenge and find out exactly how good this stuff is. Because internally at Ciena, you have the engineering teams, and they need to go and write a really big check to continue to be in this business. And so somebody says, why are we in this business? This is really expensive. And then the subordinate says, well, it's because their stuff is best in class, world class. And they say, well, if that's the case, let's get it out in the market and let's put an alternative source of supply. And, let's make sure that there's a diverse market for DSPs. And so if in fact this thing is world class, and then you'll see some commercial success. But if they don't meet with any commercial success, I think that really calls into question whether Ciena should continue to develop their own DSPs. So this is...
Yeah, good point.
And so from a pricing perspective, I would think that that's an easy thing to go solve. I mean, because it's in the best interest of Ciena, and it's in the best interest of Aclaro, Neo, and Lumentum to make sure that there's an alternative source of supply. And those guys are vertically integrated with the exception of the DSP, and I'm sure that Ciena would be willing to help them along in that area.
Right. And I'd argue, too, I do think Ciena wants to do this for a profit. I think it's going to be margin accretive, right? If you think about where the gross margins are now in the mid-40s, if you can start to layer on just pure DSP sales on top of that, it would definitely be a profitable move for these guys.
Just about anybody in the world can make this margin accretive. I mean, it doesn't require a whole lot of skill. I mean, it's all the product is done. It's like printing money.
Yep. Okay, that's fair. And then how about just DCO market while we're kind of on the topic?
Sure. So I think, the way to think about the DCO market is it's for some equipment vendors who are willing to accept a compromise in performance, they get all of the benefits of pluggability that DCO brings. So in the near term, I think, Acacia's got their 200 gig DCO. Feedback from people I spoke to was that, it's doing pretty well. And they're very positive on it, but it's not clear to me that there's a huge market for that yet. I think if you look at the web scale guys who are trying to really optimize on a cost per bit basis in these dedicated DCI platforms, none of them use DCO. So the market for DCO are some of the IP router guys and some of the lower volume situations where people want to have coherent interfaces on their equipment. But they don't necessarily, they want more of the convenience and not necessarily the high density and high performance they can get from dedicated or ACO-based coherent solutions. Ultimately, the real question is what's going to happen in China as they migrate from CFP to CFP2 and whether they go to DCO or ACO. And that's really the ultimate opportunity for the CFP2 DCO is what's going to happen in China. And that's a decision that, that transition will really take place at around the end of this year. And at that point, there's also going to be DSPs in place from both NEL, who is already sampling theirs, and Clarify, which I think is going to be sampling pretty shortly.
Yep, it sounds like they are soon. As far as the timeline or status of the CFP2 DCOs from Acacia, they're sampling now, is that kind of...
Yeah, I don't know the
your
specific,
best understanding.
But the just talking with people, my feeling was it was pretty baked. It was ready to go, but I didn't drill into that in a big way, so I wouldn't take that information to the bank.
Okay, all right, perfect. How about the topic du jour on Wall Street is China, right? And curious to know if you were able to kind of glean anything about, China tenders or kind of status of some of these Chinese network upgrades.
Yeah, so that was pretty funny. I was at dinner on Wednesday night with a couple of Huawei guys, and I asked them some questions about this, and the look on their faces was that they were just so sick of everyone asking them that question. I mean, the guy who runs the optical group at Huawei, I think he feels like he'd been felt up like 100 times just trying to, figure out what's going on. And I think it really boils down to this, is if everything happens as they expect it to happen, you're going to see 30% port growth in China this year. And of the stuff that gets shipped, around a third of that is going to be DCO, which is going to be built internally at Huawei. There's the only thing is the questions about there's some activity in the next couple of weeks, and unfortunately, I don't know the details of it. Some people call it phase 12. Other people, yeah. When you talk about phase 12, they don't even know what that is. But there's some decisions being made that will sort of lock in place what the demand is going to look like this year. And the numbers that I gave earlier are the expected outcome. But when I was talking to the folks from Huawei, there was a guy there also from China Mobile. And, you know, he was sort of frustrated being asked the same question over and over. So he just pointed his hands over to the China Mobile guy and said, you know, ask him. And he said, well, we're in the process of finalizing our decisions. So something's okay. Happening in the next couple of weeks. But I wish I could say, like, oh, this is the meeting. This is where it's going to be held. This is the day. But I don't have that.
So that's fairly consistent. It's that we've been hearing that early April is when the tenders, phase 12 tenders, you know, we've been made public, and then there'll be, you know, a period of time before those tenders get to awards. I guess my concern is, I guess I don't know the lead time between tenders and awards, but, I mean, you still feel like the industry can ship 30% port growth to China if it's going to be that back-end loaded?
I don't So, I mean, first of all, I'm not sure exactly how back-end loaded it is because from what I understand, there was some inventory overhang going into Q1. So they may be building and shipping right now. They're just doing it from stuff that they had on the shelves. I don't, I don't know that, you know, it's, when you say back-end loaded, it's going to be that heavily skewed.
Okay. At a minimum, it feels like there's not much shipments into China for 100G in Q1. So it's just three quarters to do it, and that's kind of what I mean by back-end loading.
Component shipments. That doesn't mean that Huawei is not making and shipping.
Sure. They could be burning off their inventory that they have. Yep. So.
But the other thing that's going on, and I think Greg talked about this at the dinner, is that there's definitely a sort of a changing of the guard in terms of the suppliers that are going into Huawei. And I think to some degree that's complicating the outlook on a vendor by vendor basis. Is there's some people who are going to are emerging through this transition stronger than they were before.
So, and who do you think is emerging stronger?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I know listening to Greg, it sounds as though they've benefited from this transition. I sat at the table with Tim Jenks from NeoPhotonics on Monday night at your dinner. And I asked him straight up, as part of this transition to DCO, did NeoPhotonics benefit from a design win standpoint, or was it neutral or negative? And he said, we definitely benefited. So everyone I've talked to has benefited, which I don't think is possible. But
exactly. That's classic. So everybody denies they lost share, but I mean, if you look at it, Oclaro is the only one kind of guiding up, and they seem to be the most confident about China. So, and what I've been told too is that they won share on the laser side, inside the CFP DCOs.
Yeah. So I don't know definitively who has won share, but the one thing I do feel pretty comfortable about is there are going to be some winners and losers as part of this transition. That's inevitable.
Yep. Hey, let me ask. I just got an inbound question on this. How about as far as drivers? Have you heard, any kind of share shifts between Qorvo, MACOM, and Inphi at Huawei?
No. And, I mean, if I were a betting man, I would think that Inphi is probably doing very well at Huawei right now, because if you recall when they announced the Clarify acquisition, they mentioned that this was, sort of at the behest of a very large Tier 1 customer. You remember that? And if...
Yes.
That Tier 1 customer, if I had to guess logically, it's got to be Huawei, because Huawei was a major partner for Clarify. That's my understanding. So as part of this deal, I would imagine Inphi probably benefits to sell in some of the surrounding components into this DCO. So I don't know that.
Yeah,
but
I agree.
I can't believe that, they just did Huawei a favor by taking Clarify under their wing, and then Huawei is going to go and give all the driver business to somebody else. That doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah, I've heard that speculation too, is that they kind of pushed them to do it and they gave them share in some of the driver business to boot. So,
Yeah, but I mean, go ahead.
No, you finish, please.
I think the interesting thing about InFi, and I was talking about this with a number of the optical component companies, is before the acquisition is announced, somebody asked me if someone like InFi should buy Clarify, and my answer was no, and that was before it was announced. And I still feel the same way, is that by having that asset and the amount of cash that it's going to take to continue to be into this business, especially as you start going to things like 7-nanometer, the only way to really get a return on that investment is by wrapping more stuff around it. And just wrapping the drivers around the DSP isn't going to be enough. So InFi, in order to get a return on the continued investment in the DSP business, is going to have to get into the optical component business. It's the only way. And when I talk about this at the dinner or with investors at one of your events, they say no way, because the margins are lower. But I don't see how they can justify continuing to invest in that DSP without also having the things to sell around it, because that business is very, very hard as a standalone business. And that is indeed why Clarify had to sell the company. They couldn't get the return on the massive cash investment. So now that it's inside a much larger company, that doesn't change the fundamentals.
Who would be the logical buyer, or who would be the logical company that they acquire?
Well, what you'd want is somebody who had, I think you need a good business that's doing very well and has all of the components so that you can be vertically integrated end to end. And I mean, when I think about the premier companies there who don't have some of the client business, it would be Lumentum or Oclaro. I really think it isn't just a little tiny, piece type of, piece part type of acquisition. They really need to be fully integrated end to end. And then InFi is the Broadcom of optics.
Yep. Interesting. Hey, so I want to go back on a China question here. So, with China starting to do, their metro upgrades, right? If you think about, this last cycle that kind of hit in November of 2015 and went for, kind of four and a half quarters, how long do you think it will take them to do a full-blown, metro upgrade in phase 12? Is this some type of timeline, or is this bigger, more complex, and more?
I don't know what phase 12 is. A metro upgrade in China is multi-year. I mean, I don't really have an answer to that. It isn't something that goes on for 18 months and then stops. I think the real question is at some point the numbers are getting so big, you can't continue to grow 30% year over year. So eventually you're going to get to a point where you're having some flat to slightly down years, and I don't know when that is.
Yep. Okay. I guess I've always thought that metro networks were, 2.5 times the dollar spend, right? So that's what I'm trying to get to. Is this like, magnitudes bigger ultimately in spending for China to upgrade the metros?
I would say that's a good guide. So if you think about 2016, that spend was almost entirely long haul. So the total spend could continue to grow, I'd say, over the next 5 years by a factor of, to be 3x what it was last year.
Yep. Yep. Perfect. All right.
But that's like a 2021, 2022, that kind of target. And then don't forget, you also have to add in the ROADMs, which is a whole new thing for China. And that was an area where I think things are really starting to come together in China. I think that the second half of this year, we should start to see some volume.
So perfect segue. That was next on my list, and I was getting ready to tee you up on that. So, what have you heard about, timing? When do ROADMs get deployed in these networks once they start?
Like I said, I think it's the second half of this year. Lumentum had a really interesting announcement. They announced this, 1x9 WSS, and I was talking to them and said, well, this this doesn't seem like a big deal. What's the big deal about this announcement? And they said, well, it's a cost-optimized WSS, right? You know, they said it's a cost-optimized WSS. And I said, oh, you mean it's a Chinese WSS? And they said, yes, exactly. So basically, Lumentum has built one of these smaller WSSs specifically for the Chinese market. And I think they're ready to go and deploy that. The only area in China where I think there's still some question is for the MCS. And China Mobile is pretty committed to going to a full CDC architecture, which uses both the WSS and MCS. China Telecom, the research labs have qualified both colorless and directionless CD, as well as the CDC contentionless architectures. But it isn't as clear that the regional guys are going to deploy contentionless at China Telecom. But the ROADM business is really starting to move at both of those carriers.
So the ROADMs are a no-brainer everywhere. It's just whether or not, just so people on the call know too, contentionless means you need a multicast switch, correct?
Correct.
Andrew?
That's correct, yeah.
Right, and that's going to be a Lumentum and NeoPhotonics, I think, kind of dominate that space. So, Sagan, you think for sure it's China Mobile and the big carriers, but maybe not the rural networks have had contentionless?
Yeah, I don't have a good idea about the division between the rural networks and the core, but my understanding is that mobile is heavily biased towards CDC, whereas telecom, it's not as clear.
Okay. All right. Maddie, if we could, why don't we just take a pause right here, see if there's anybody in the audience that wants to ask questions. I'm still going to dive into QSFP 28 and some other stuff, but if there's any questions specifically on, you know, China and some of the stuff that's been discussed, why don't you just pull the audience quickly.
Certainly, Mr. Jensen. At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. So pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. And your first question comes from the line of Scott Hogan from TYDH Capital. Your line is open.
Hey, can you guys hear me?
Yep.
Yes.
Hey, Andrew, this is Scott Haugen. We sat next to each other Monday. Just back to your Inphi commentary about them needing to vertically integrate. You know, it's my understanding that much of Inphi's success has been from being Switzerland, so working with Oclaro and Lumentum and also the platform guys like Huawei, like they've got the TIAs going into the new DCO and all that. So if they did vertically integrate with one of them, like an Oclaro, wouldn't that drive a Finisar away or one of the other vendors away? Wouldn't that drive other people away from them?
Yeah, absolutely.
So strategically, why do you think they would make that move if there would be that dyssynergy?
Because I think ultimately you can't. They're facing pressure from one side, which is, you know, coming from the switch or the DSP, and they're facing pressure on the optical side. And increasingly, to get the better and better performance out of these optics, you need to have the full system approach. So, I mean, another way to put it is, you know, you look at someone like Acacia. What if Acacia gets into the driver business? You know, what if Oclaro gets into the driver business? And then suddenly, Inphi's franchise is a lot less valuable. They've built a very, very, you know, strong technical expertise in this area. And, you know, and it's just my opinion, I can be wrong, but if their objective is to grow that business, that's the way to do it, is to take that expertise and become vertically integrated like someone like Acacia. And I think that they need to do that if they weren't in the DSP business, I would agree with you. But now that they're into the DSP business, which is, you know, the most cash intensive portion of this whole supply chain, in order to get a return on that investment, I don't know how they do that without being able to wrap a lot of other components around it, the way that Ciena wraps sheet metal around their DSP, or the way that Acacia wraps a subsystem around their DSP. I don't, especially as we start going to things like 7 nanometer for, you know, 40 gig, 400 gig coherent, the investments have become very, very large. And it's tough to, even if you're getting 60 or 70% gross margins on those chips, the gross margin dollars and the magnitude of those gross margin dollars, it's hard to get enough of them to cover the fixed investment costs of the DSP programs.
Okay. Thanks.
Maddie, any other questions?
There are no further questions at this time.
All right, I got
Mr.
a couple
Jensen,
emails.
I'll turn the call back over to you.
Thank you. So, Andrew, I got a couple emailed ones that I'll rattle off now. So it says, could you ask Andrew about MACOM's acquisition of AMCC and if what he said about Inphi Clarify applies to them as well?
Well, that's a good question. So I think MACOM's acquisition of AMCC, and I'm a little soft in this area, that was more for the OTN framer business and, you know, some of those components. I don't think it was for the drivers. I think that was already part of MACOM, is my understanding. So I'm not sure that's related. But you know, MACOM actually has a lot of the optics that they picked up as part of an earlier acquisition. So I wouldn't be surprised to see them move in this direction as well.
Yep. All right. Another question I got. Let me find it here. I think I know the answer here, but it says, do you think Clarify has a good chance to get into Huawei for DSPs versus Acacia?
I think Inphi Clarify is already there. I mean, I think that's why Inphi did the deal, and it's just in the form of an ASIC. So it's quote Huawei's chip, but my understanding is that Clarify provides a lot of the key intellectual property for that chip.
Yep. So, and maybe to paraphrase what I think you've been saying is that Acacia could potentially get into Huawei because of their time-to-market advantage on CFP2 DCOs. Is that correct?
Yeah, and a lot of that is going to be, you know, dependent on what happens with NEL, which is the other key partner for Huawei. And you know, NEL has chips that are now coming out that should be able to do 200 gig DCOs, just like Acacia's doing. But, I mean, Acacia has a lot of very strong vertical integration to go with the DSP. Like, they announced at the show this BGA-based, you know, photonic packaging approach, which is pretty interesting. And, you know, they're doing a lot of different things right now that are very interesting.
Yeah, okay. All right, another question here. Thoughts on Fujitsu's 600G CFP2 ACO.
Ah, well, NeoPhotonics.
Timing when you think it's available.
NeoPhotonics also announced one, and some other vendors didn't announce them, but are working on them. I think that's a real long-term product. I think there was a consensus that everyone is working towards 64 gigabaud, 64 QAM. That's the end game, but people that I spoke with at the component vendors said that there's going to be a stopping point at 400G. You know, 64 gigabaud, 16 QAM, or, you know, 56 gigabaud, 32 QAM or something, because the challenges of getting to 600 gig are just huge to actually make that work and make it deployable. There was a tremendous amount of difficulty just getting 250 gig to work at Cisco with the Aclaro products. And, you know, that was not easy. And so 600 gig is an order of magnitude more. So the timing on those ACO modules, I would expect to see people starting to use those maybe, I don't know, mid next year, end of next year. But I would expect it's probably going to be at 400 gig first. And, you know, 600 gig will be something that will come later.
Yep. Okay, I got one more question. There's two more that came in. And then after this, I want to switch to QSFP28. But who poses the greatest risk to Aclaro's incumbency on ACOs? And then where is the ACO pricing heading?
Well, I mean, in terms of pricing, I don't know where that's heading. Obviously, it's down. But it comes down to how many suppliers can go into Cisco and deliver a product with comparable performance. And I don't think there's too many that can do that right now. So I wouldn't expect that there's going to be a huge pressure on pricing. In terms of who that vendor is, I think, you know, my understanding is that the folks that are in the lead are Finisar. And that's what Greg said at the dinner on Monday. You know, that was the first company that he named. But I'm not really aware of who else is that. And the only thing that I'm troubled by is I just don't know what happened to Fujitsu. They entered this market almost before anyone else, yet they're still not here. So it's not clear to me what's gone wrong with that company, and I wish I understood what had happened.
Yep. The way you comments that you said earlier, it's hard to ramp these things, even once you've sampled, you know, good luck, there's different performance and stuff.
Yeah, but I think my understanding is that Oclaro made it, you know, before they made the decision to invest in all of production capacity on the ACOs, is they found a way to make sure that they were backstopped in terms of delivery. And I don't know the details of that, but Greg has been pretty adamant that, you know, they wouldn't have gone forward with, you know, all of this investment if they didn't think that they were covered.
Yep. All right, fair. So one more question, and then we'll off to the data center stuff. But what are your broad thoughts on Acacia now?
For the last couple of years, I've been very focused on the importance of vertical integration by a lot of the OEMs. Is that someone like Ciena, Nokia, Infinera, they really needed to own the DSP technology in order to be strong. But what's happened in the last year has started to change that. You've got Clarify, you know, moving under the wings of Infi, which, you know, has the ability to make, you know, all the investments necessary. You've got NEL, which is still in the game, and now you have Ciena, which is, you know, throwing in, you know, their hat into the ring for DSPs. There's other companies out there who are evaluating starting DSP developments specifically for the shorter reach, 80-kilometer, 400-gig area. So the number of people who are building DSPs and supplying them is increasing. So I think, you know, Acacia, one of their challenges has always been, you know, when they wake up in the morning, 80% of their market is gone because those people are already doing their own DSPs. And that's why Acacia got into the ACO business. That's why they started selling their own DSPs. They had to change their business model in order to address all of these larger companies who didn't necessarily want to buy an end-to-end module and pay for the margin stacking that's in that. But now that there's other DSP vendors that are out there and there's a lot more choice, I actually think in some ways that's better for Acacia's business because now, you know, it's more of a traditional component environment.
All right, interesting. All right, so now shifting gears, as the market goes away from CFP, CFP2s towards QSFP28, who are the winners and losers?
Oh, boy. I don't, you know, you're talking about as people going to 100 gig, or did you say 200 gig?
No. Well, 100G, just QSFP28 right now.
Yeah, I don't have a good idea of who are the winners and losers there. It seems as though there's a lot of supply coming online. The one that everyone talks about is Intel, is sort of the potential to spoil the party if they come in. I've heard that they've had a very hard time getting the CWDM4 stuff to work in volume. I've also heard that Lux Terrace got some interesting stuff that they're working on, but you know, I don't have an opinion on who the winners and losers are going to be for QSFP28. I mean, as commodity products go, that's as commodity as they get. So the winners and losers are going to be the ones that have the most volume, have the, you know, technical benefits in the manufacturing side, and I think those are just your traditional vendors that everybody knows. The one wild card is Intel and what they can make work.
So, Andrew, can you help us out for the QSFP28 market? How much of it currently is PSM versus LR4 versus CWDM? I mean, let me just kind of tier, you know, the biggest to the smallest market.
Troy, I don't know. I don't actually track that on a quantitative basis. So I don't think I can really answer that.
I mean, it's fair to say, say on units, it's got to be PSM and short reach, right? Because it's an inner data center stuff. Or
I'm like I said, I'm real careful about trying to have an opinion on that because I just don't know.
Okay. All right. How about on the silicon photonics stuff that you mentioned? So, you know, Luxtera, I think, just does PSM-4. I'm not totally sure of that. But how big of a risk is that then to these established guys?
Well, I think the risk is that, you know, if somebody has a breakthrough in terms of manufacturing costs, and then they can bring the prices down. And so somebody needs a breakthrough in manufacturing technology coupled with the ability to ramp it in volume. And I think that's where, you know, Intel is the one that everyone's watching, is if they can do that, then that's a, I don't want to say a risk, because, you know, at least from an equipment perspective, having more supply of these modules would be great. But it certainly would be a risk to a lot of the incumbent guys and, you know, and whatever pricing that they have.
Yep. So with respect to Intel, they do have PSM-4, correct? But you're just saying that they're struggling with the DWDM?
Yeah, but PSM-4, I think everyone's aware of the fact that PSM-4, there's no new PSM-4 installs taking place now, right? It's all of the cabling and things that were put in place. Almost everyone has now moved to CWDM-4. So the PSM-4 market isn't going to get bigger.
Yep, I've heard that too from Greg Doherty. So I guess I had always heard that Intel was the one, excuse me, Microsoft was the one who had adopted PSM-4 the most, but kind of moved away because the ribbon cable is so expensive.
Well, originally Facebook was going to use it, and then they didn't. And then Amazon was using it, and they started to move away from it. And I don't know Facebook's current status. I mean, I don't know Microsoft's current status.
So with a silicon, so PSM-4, I mean, so if these silicon photonics guys are making PSM-4 modules, that sounds like a dead end for them, right? They have to get into DWDM.
Yeah, absolutely.
And do you know, so Intel's struggling with that. Have you heard where Luxtera is as far as their DWDM development?
No.
Okay, that was short and sweet. just LR4, how about the longer reach QSFP28? Products?
I think, I mean, those are going to be cannibalizing the demand for CFP and CFP2, which is, you know, goes back to some of the inventory stuff in China. I think there's, you know, Huawei's trying to transition to QSFP28 just like everyone else is, because it's a far more compelling solution for LR4 and below. And so as that starts to come online in terms of demand, the CFP and CFP2, which was the only way to get LR4 until recently, you know, the demand for those will cap out and decline.
Okay. Let me see here. So I got another question from a client. Who should Intel acquire?
Oh, that's, I don't know.
And do they want all the legacy stuff, or do they just want silicon?
I think, you know what, I'll tell you who Intel needs to buy. And Intel should have bought Broadcom, right? They let that one get away. That was a mistake. So that ship has sailed. But what Intel needs from a strategic is they need the Ethernet switch. So there's a bunch of these new little Ethernet startups, and I don't know who's better than who, but that's a business that Intel needs to be in. They have everything now around it, including, you know, the optics, and more importantly, the process technology to build those optics. But when they can start building optics right into an Ethernet switch and have it all be co-packaged, well, then that's when you need to start being worried about the QSFP28 business. But that's the one piece that they're missing, provided they can get all their optics stuff working. When they can start embedding those optics directly into the logic and cutting out all the stuff in between, that's the holy grail of silicon photonics. And that's the end game that Intel is really working for, in a way that you know, some of these smaller guys like, you know, LuxTerra and everyone else, they don't have the size and scale to control the brains that all of these optics are going to need to be embedded into.
Yep. Fair. Hey, how about just higher level on QSFP28? I mean, a lot of the guys that we talk to in the industry say it's capacity constraint throughout the year, and they're, you know, adding 20-25% capacity on a sequential basis. You know, do you agree with that, you know, the size and kind of sustainability of the demand right now for QSFP28?
I think in the short term, that's right. But at some point, all of this capacity is going to catch up to demand. What I do know is that at the current pricing, the QSFP28 costs in very nicely. So if you look at the reasons why, you know, you're still seeing all this demand for 40 gig, it's not because of pricing. It's just because they can't get 100 gig QSFP28s. Is at the price point that it's at now, even when it's supply constrained, the economics of 100 gig work in the data center. So as more and more capacity comes online, it seems like we haven't gotten close to that, you know, pricing elasticity threshold where I bought 100,000 units at this price, but for me to want 500,000 units, it's going to have to be half the price. It doesn't seem like we're close to that. So I think the bigger risk is at some point, does all of the capacity additions just get ahead of, you know, the natural demand? And then how is this? This is definitely at some point, and I've said this over and over again, it is going to come back and the 40 gig market is going to be impacted. Because the reason that is continuing so strongly is because of the lack of product at the 100 gig side.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. 40G stuck in much longer than we thought. And I think all the shorts listening to this call are trying to figure out that point, right, when the supply-demand imbalance kind of...
I don't know. I don't know the answer. And that was one of the things I said at the dinner, is figuring this out is next to impossible because there's so many moving parts. But I do know that at some point we get there. It just doesn't feel like it's anytime soon.
Yep. Hey, so I'm just going to change gears a little bit, Andrew. I've always thought of you as kind of my my expert on Infinera. If you go back in time, you love the company. About a year ago, you turned kind of negative on them and was dead right. Just your thoughts on Infinera currently.
This is the next quarter is absolutely crucial for that company. Is that everything... The future of that company is really starting to turn on what the events that happen in the next 3 to 6 months. And I don't know what the outcome is going to be. I spoke with a customer of Infinera who is not a DCI customer, more of a traditional system vendor, and they had not yet evaluated the Gen 4 PIC-based equipment in their labs. That makes sense because, you know, Infinera has been prioritizing the Gen 4 PIC in their DCI interconnect system, the CX2. So it hasn't quite made it to all the other systems. But that part has to have performance and, you know, pricing that's superior to a lot of these other solutions that are out there now, like, you know, Cisco's 250 gig NCS1000, the new Wave server from Ciena. There's a lot of these new systems out there who have, you know, pretty high density and, you know, pretty compelling solutions. So what if Infinera's system is just at parity at those guys, they're going to have some problems. If they're able to do what they've done in the past, excuse me, I've been talking too much this week. If they can do what they've done in the past and really leap ahead of everyone, then this could be a huge turning point. And I wish I knew the answer. But it's everything will become clear and all will be revealed in the next 3 to 6 months.
Okay. All right. I got a few more questions I want to hammer out here. This is a good one that I meant to ask earlier. So thanks, Will, for reminding me. But I guess this week there was an announcement out of China, specifically the Broadcast Authority, or I think the acronym is SARFT.
SRAFT. And they have
plans to spend it. SRAFT?
SRAFT, yeah. The worst acronym ever, yeah.
Yeah, it rolls off the tongue so easily. But it sounds like they announced plans to invest $15 billion in network upgrades over a two-phase CapEx plan. So Can you explain this, or you have any thoughts on this?
No, I haven't been able to dig into that. I don't know what the impact will be, but it'll all go to Huawei and ZTE and FiberHome.
This is incremental, right? Everything we've heard of China is really for China Mobile, China Telco, China Unicom. This would be a new China CapEx spend?
Yeah, because with there's been some activity outside of optical networks where they were trying to – originally, the cable system in China was a lot like the cable system in the United States, 35 years ago. It was just basically mom-and-pop cable shops in little neighborhoods that they were built. And eventually, all of these things were conglomerated and glued together. And that process has been underway in China where you have a cable company that served an apartment building. And so all of these things have been glued together, and now the government wants to put in place a sort of a second path to the home. So just like we have the phone company and we have the cable company giving broadband to our homes, what China wants to do is make sure that the same situation exists there, so that if you want broadband service, you don't just have to buy from China Telecom or Unicom. There's another alternative. So that's the overall mission. But in terms of the magnitude and the timing, I don't have any idea. But this has been a very long, ongoing effort by the Chinese government and Schraft to ensure that there's some competition at the broadband level for the consumer.
Yep. All right, good. Sounds incremental. So I had two guys ask me questions for your view on AAOI.
Yeah. AOI is like the dark corner. I just don't know those guys very well. So I don't I don't want to pontificate because I don't feel like I'm really well-informed about the company.
Okay. I kind of knew that, but I thought I'd ask it. Another one, it says, thoughts on what went wrong at NIO aside from China slowness?
Don't know. Ask Tim.
That makes a lot of us yield problems, I guess, right, with kind of the capacity expansion. So,
I don't know.
All right, here is another one. Someone asked me this question. I know the answer, but I just want everyone to hear it. Your thoughts on 3D sensing?
Well, it's outside my strike zone. I think everybody just loves the idea of getting into the iPhone. And I'm assuming that no one ever says that word. I think I can say that word because I'm not selling anything to Apple. But it's also been hinted at that obviously it's not just them. It's every other smartphone manufacturer in the Android ecosystem. And it's a tool that's once it's put in place, all of the software guys are going to figure out all kinds of cool things to go do with it. So it has the potential to be a part of the phone in the same way that the cameras is a part of the phone that's now something that you could never take away. And to me, it seems like a huge opportunity. The trick is to avoid being in what I like to call the portal player situation. I don't know if you remember a company called Portal Player, but they were the ones that were supplying the logic for the original Apple iPod. And they had a great business. And then one day, Apple decided to do their own chips. And then it was game over. The company just vaporized. So on the 3D sensing, the trick is this so important that a company like Apple would want to vertically integrate this kind of technology? That I don't know. So that's if everyone's so excited about 3D sensing and they're right to be excited, but if you wanted to have something to worry about, that's what I would worry about.
That's very interesting because this Princeton Optronics, I think, just got acquired. Apple could definitely do that, right? Just buy a design shop and create their own VCSELs and use some outsource. But I guess that's a risk in the future. And for those on the call, I didn't ask Andrew about this because he's never really focused on this. So wasn't in kind of the Q&A line. But a couple more I want to hammer out here quick, Andrew.
Mm-hmm.
This is a good one. It says, does the transition to QSFP28, the CWDM4 and LR4, have a negative impact on Lite and Finisar given the price disparity between CFP and QSFP28?
So I don't think so, because what happens is, it's not that CFP goes away, is it just stops growing, right? Because those are very telecom-focused types of formats. So it isn't like in the data center where things ramp up really fast and then they disappear very fast. It's a much more gradual kind of curve. So just at a high level, I wouldn't come to that conclusion that suddenly all the CFP revenue is going to be displaced by QSFP. I think the QSFP is additive to CFP, and then the CFP decays. I don't think that this is a bad event.
I mean, to me, this is just natural with optics, right? I mean, every form factor has a subsequent smaller form factor.
Right, and the one thing that's always consistent in optics is these formats live a lot longer than anyone ever thought they would, at least on the telecom side.
Yep, I agree. Here's another good one just came in. What happened to ADVA DCI? ? And then Microsoft?
Well, there's what I think happened, and then I've had somebody tell me I was wrong, so I'm worried about repeating it. But I think ADVA has some pretty significant business with a major North American webco, and I'm not going to name
who. Amazon, I believe, was the belief.
Well, that's who I thought it was, but somebody told me I was wrong. I could be wrong on that, but it was definitely a North American webco, and that business went away. And the debate is whether it's coming back or not, or if it's gone for good. And the problem I have with the idea that it's coming back is they were using a very old system, right? I mean, they were using the first generation Acacia CFP in the FSP 3000 from ADVA. And there's just a lot of other options out there now, including ADVA's, Cloud Connect, which uses the Acacia 400G module, the 2x200, which is a great product. So ADVA, could get this business back, but I would expect it to return in a different system. But whenever there's a transition from one system to another, it goes out to bid, and then everybody has a shot at it. So I don't know whether or not ADVA is going to, be able to bridge that business over to their new system or not. I mean, that's a better question for them. But that's ultimately what I think what they need to do.
Yep. Well, Andrew, with that, I think we're at the end of our time here. I'll let you get back to your day there. I think you're writing. But I really appreciate the thoughts and the time, and you let me know if I can return the favor.
Well, if anyone wants a transcript of this call, I'm going to publish it on my website, our website, signal.ai. And if you register, you'll also be able to read some of my notes from OFC as they get published over the next couple weeks. So I invite you to just go register an account there if you want to download the transcript and see some of my OFC notes.
Perfect. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Andrew, and we'll be in touch.
All right. Thank you, Troy.
Yep. Take care.
This concludes today's call.
This call has been recorded.